bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the big show. Slight different. And you, the most observant amongst you, will notice I am not Ewan Rankin, and I am not Eric Lanigan. I am the substitute brought on at the last moment. I am Carl Madden, and this is our show. I'm the B team, so fortunately I'm joined with some A-list guests. Starting off, we have Mr. James Hart. How are you doing, sir?
Good evening. I thought I'd start by wishing the England a good luck in the Eurovision Kickball Soccer Championships on Sunday. I've been offering them my support by not watching them. I was watching the match, the first of the three matches, and they were losing, and I thought, oh, sod this. I switched the telly off, and they won. And I thought, right, we could do some science here. And so I didn't watch any of the second match, and won. So on Sunday, I'll be assiduously not watching England.
So you think you're a jinx?
No. I think I'm a reverse supporter. Oh. So as long as I don't watch them, it's just like Schrodinger's football team.
Okay. Also joining us, we have Mr. Kerry Holzman. How are you doing, sir?
Hello, good, thanks. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Have you blown anything up recently?
No, you know, it's too hot in the desert right now. We're getting over 110 degrees now every day. So, yeah, adding fire to that just doesn't sound like a good idea.
110.
I never understood people who smoke, you know, here in Arizona will go outside. They have to go outside to smoke. But it's 110 degrees, so yeah, let me go outside and breathe fire. That'll cool me down, sure, yeah.
We make him go outside in the rain here.
I'm feeling a very strong responsibility to represent the Yanks here today and to be the only one without an accent.
I was going to make that observation as well. It's a long time since you've been the sole U.S. representative, isn't it?
That's a lot of pressure. I don't know if I can handle it.
Ooh. Now, could someone tell me what he's saying?
Hang on. Let me do the intros first before you start jumping in. Get back in your seat, Mr. Hart, before, and behave yourself.
Doesn't work like normal shows.
Also joining us, we have Sarah Gray. How are you doing?
Oh, that was a bit of a formal introduction, Mr. Madden.
I always do formal.
Oh.
It's old BBC hang up.
Yes, well, you need to be wearing a DJ then, don't you? And you need to speak with a very clipped voice like this.
I thought you meant I had to have Tony Blackburn strapped around my shoulders or something. DJ.
Sorry?
No.
I didn't hear what you said, sorry.
I said, when you said DJ, I thought you meant I was meant to have Tony Blackburn draped around my shoulders or something.
Well, you know. No, that's what you want to do, then fine.
Okay. And rounding out our panel, we have the self-confessed geek, David Dean. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Cole. So shall I regard you as a Theo Walcott of the podcast then?
You can do. I have no idea what that reference means, but okay, I know he's a footballer. Okay,
I'm sure about three people do, so that's all right then.
He's wearing his England shirt.
I am.
I can't see again. Right, so the news this week, the tech news. Well, apparently a little company called Microsoft has unveiled something called the Surface Tablet, which they hope will do very well. We'll come to that in a minute. Apparently, Samsung Galaxy S3 has replaced the iPhone 4S as the most popular phone in the UK. Amazon saying it's going to bring its app store to Europe, which is about time, I think. And apparently, nearly 70% of America Android users can't figure out how to turn Wi-Fi on their Android phones, which is nice. So let's get back to the beginning. The first story, the Windows 8 Surface Tablet. Now, I take it everyone saw this in the news. Anyone miss this by any chance?
I don't think you could miss it, could you?
Well, no. I mean, not the way Steve Ballmer bounced onto the stage and introduced it. So what we've got is, I've got to admit, it's a lovely-looking tablet. However, a few missing factors. No price, no release date, no real specs, no manufacturers mentioned. Do you reckon it's got a chance?
I think we need more information about it first, but one thing I would say about it was it is hardly a surprise. I mean, ever since Windows 8 came out, not officially came out, but in terms of the pre-releases that they put out, it was obviously that they were looking to release a tablet of their own design.
But what I'm confused about, the two versions, you got the Windows, the ARM version and the Intel version. Apparently both can be running different software somehow.
And you've got the normal one, the professional one.
They did say that. But is that the Intel and the ARM one, the Pro one and the normal one, for want of a better word?
I believe so. The Pro version, according to Ewan in the chat room, hi Ewan, is a full PC.
Okay.
So that opinion, I think this is going to kick the arse of the Transformer Prime. The Asus Transformer Prime has cornered the market in this multi-purpose half notebook, half tablet thing. And when Microsoft have got that. Unfortunately, what with it being a really, really narrow niche, and the fact that anybody who wants a tablet has either got an iPad or a crappy little thing off Amazon, you kind of wonder whether or not they're going to succeed with this. Will they be able to sell enough of them is the question.
Well, Microsoft, you mean, not these other companies.
I think if they...
The people... Well, aren't they getting them badged by... I can't remember who they said it was. They're getting them badged up, aren't they?
No, they're made by Microsoft, aren't they?
They're just being made by Microsoft, apparently. And yeah. Now, there is some news flying around as well that this has kind of upset the OEM partners. Because apparently... They were told about this coming. Apparently, they said, "Well, we was given 3 days' notice, and we wasn't really told what was about to be announced."
Well, I like how you introduce Microsoft as a small company, and you say it ironically, but it is micro and it is soft. So you think it would be a small company? My thoughts are: if Microsoft makes this, they're going to upset their partners because for them to make a competing product, they have to pay a licensing fee to put the software on it. You think Microsoft's paying themselves for their own licensing fee? So how can their partners, the people who have sold their software for years and years and years, how would you feel if you were selling billions of dollars of computers that came only with Windows software? Only to have Microsoft start building a new product, a new form of product that they intend to brand and label as their own. Now, you know, they've gone into hardware a little bit before with webcams and keyboards and mice, and that really hasn't caused too much
of a problem. And the Xbox.
Well, yeah, and the Xbox. But these weren't things that Dell and HP and others were providing. Sure, Logitech is really well known for their keyboards and mice, but nobody really goes out of their way that I'm aware of to find just a Dell keyboard or an HP mouse. I've not heard of anybody doing that. So they've built a really good hardware reputation up, Microsoft has, with regards to the quality of their keyboards and mice. For them to now get into making this tablet is clearly just a monkey see, monkey do with Apple. And I like the point Sarah made. It makes complete sense, and I don't know why I didn't put those two things together. When I saw the beta of Windows 8 and played with it, the first thing I thought of is this is like a giant smartphone. I didn't think it was like a giant tablet. A tablet's nothing more than a big smartphone, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm willing to make sacrifices on a smartphone to be able to have the functionality on this little 3-inch screen. Maybe I'll be willing to make the sacrifices on a laptop or a tablet to have the portability. But why would I want to make those sacrifices on the interface of a desktop computer? And that's what I think has a lot of people upset at Windows 8. But this all comes together nicely now, and thank you for pointing that out, Sarah, that the Windows 8 tie-in with the Windows tablet is... I should have saw that coming. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
The operating system is so much more lent to being operated on a tablet than on a desktop machine.
That's my point.
Or even a laptop. I wonder if people will. I don't know if it comes. You know, it comes with a keyboard, but does the keyboard come with any kind of navigation equipment? Does it come with like a touchpad or anything?
It has got a touchpad on the bottom and a left and right mouse button, apparently.
Oh right,
that thing down there, that little fold-out cover keyboard.
Yeah, but come on, let's face it. You know, who's actually going to use it like that? If they're going to use a mouse, you're going to use it with an external mouse, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and it's got a USB port, so I'm assuming it can actually, you know, stick in a USB mouse, or maybe even a Bluetooth one. Like I say, we don't really know enough. They haven't said enough.
I think
they just come out and say, likely. Oh, look, we've got something coming. Get excited.
And they as soon did as that,
start
they?
Asking questions, they hear no answers back.
Why would you want a mouse if you've got a touch screen? Why would you want a mouse?
Yeah, exactly.
Wouldn't it be more natural to touch the screen and drag what you want than it would be to use a mouse to point on the screen?
So why have they got the mouse buttons on the device?
Because it's supposed to operate buttons, like a Windows
machine. I understand buttons. Some people don't like the screen tapping.
What are you trying to say something there, Dave?
I was just saying we've seen all this before with Courier, haven't we? I mean, they sort of showcase some very, very smart looking hardware and it never turned up. I'm not saying that will happen this time, but
well, that was more of a leaked thing, wasn't it? I mean, they've openly come out and had a press conference and released the video. By the way, did anyone actually watch the press conference, the video?
No.
Okay, so you had Steve Ballmer come out and do his piece, and then they had some guy whose name escapes me. It was called Steve something. He came out with his shiny new Surface tablet, and the first thing he'd done is launch Windows Explorer on it, and then he couldn't get it out of Windows Explorer, and he had to embarrassingly run back to the little podium thing and get another pad to carry on the demonstration. So that's not a very good advertisement straight off.
I'm just looking to see if the actual keyboard's got a control and alt and a delete, because I'm going to need them.
You're going to have to hold one corner of the screen, three corners of the screen. It's going to require using your foot and two hands.
So before we move on, I mean, it's obvious.
This control alt delete, wasn't it?
Yeah, to the iPad. Now, I asked this a minute ago, but why do you think Microsoft feel the need to come out and say these things before they've got a finished product to go?
It's the opposite of what Apple does, isn't it? Apple will announce something, and within the week, by the weekend, it'll be on sale. Microsoft, but then again, I think Apple sets itself apart as being pretty much the only manufacturer that does that. Just think of when the Samsung Galaxy S3 was announced, and when it's only recently actually come onto the shelves. Massive amount of hype gets built up, and I think Microsoft is just trying to get the hype up.
And
they'll probably sell it for Christmas.
The one thing different about Microsoft, though, I think in this case, is the software, obviously, and I think the big part of it is Microsoft Office itself. There's such an enormous user base all over the world that anything that can run it properly, because obviously the iPad can't at the moment, is going to be a massive boost for a tablet product. And if it's running like a PC that runs proper Office, then that's even better. I just worry if they're trying to hang their hat on that too much, to be honest. And I'm still concerned about the other version, the RT version, where the software is not even out there yet. So there's no apps, nothing. So I'm not quite sure why they're doing that. They're going to confuse the hell out of people.
Well, it's confused me already.
You say that, though, but I think I wonder actually if applications are becoming less relevant now that stuff is being delivered over the web. It is more about what you can do with your web browser as much as your applications. I mean, much of what I do at work now is web-based, and therefore, if this is for the enterprise environment, as long as it runs some kind of web engine and some kind of email thing, my colleagues are carrying around iPads to do the logging because it does the job. It is what they can do, and they can carry it around in one hand and type with the other. It doesn't really matter what it does, but it's just no. I don't think it matters.
Are you sure? I think apps are still far more popular now than the web stuff.
Okay, well, I'll challenge you on that one. I mean, okay. What have you downloaded for your Mac recently?
Nothing recently, I got to say. For me, pad, lots of things.
Loads of stuff. I'm constantly downloading stuff onto my phone, but not so much on my PC, because I do so much. I mean, you know, there's not a time when my Google Chrome doesn't have 8 tabs open, all doing something else. And Alex, no, that's not the correct answer.
So Photoshop, movie editing, podcasting.
I must admit, I'm with James on this. I do think that web is very much, and I know this is a strong view that Eric has as well. No, he's not here tonight, but I know he shares the view as well that the web is very much the way to go. And once HTML5 actually really establishes itself, I think you're going to see a resurgence in the web as the primary method. Because if you think about it from a software point of view, it means you're developing once for a platform and any device can use that. It doesn't matter what kind of device it is, what operating system, what platform, it will be able to use and use that website.
Mm-hmm. That does sound like a holy grail for these companies.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, Google are going there with the Chromebook and stuff like that because they're recognizing that everything they want to do is within a browser, and they've actually started building apps with, you know, they're building apps within Chrome now.
Hmm.
Yep.
But are they any good?
I don't know. I guess I've been around long enough that this, I don't get too excited over this kind of stuff anymore because, wow, you know, I was so excited when DOS 6 came out, and then I got really excited when Windows 3.1.1 came out, and I remember getting excited when Windows 95 came out. And Microsoft will go through this process of telling you how wonderful this is going to be and how people lined up at the stores at midnight to buy Windows XP. Nobody's lining up at the stores to buy Windows 7 or Windows 8. It's just, it's not going to happen. And people, I think, have just got burned out with Microsoft. And it's not just Microsoft, but when it comes to technology and such, Microsoft is the main company that, that you know, has the majority of the you know, users. And I think it just gets old. It gets old. You know, I still like my Windows XP, but Microsoft has been spending the last 2 or 3 years telling me how much crap XP is and how I should have bought Windows 7 because Windows 7 was so much better. And now has been spending the last 2 years telling me how much crap Vista is and why I need to have Windows 7. They go through billions of dollars in marketing to tell you this is what you want, convince you this is what you want, put an anti-copy devices in, copy protection in to keep you from copying it illegally because you want it so bad you're willing to steal it. Make forcing you to go through a pain in the butt activation process and then telling you, oh, that's crap. This is what you want now. And I just go, okay, you know, I'm so burned out on it. I'm just like, okay, yeah, you know, my eyes go, you know. It's like, so now you're coming out with a tablet. Whoop-dee-doo. Good for you. Let me know when you get it working and you've minimized the size, increased the battery life. You've got a bunch of apps or uses, you know, some killer app for me to need that. So you can convince me that I need it so that 2 years later or 18 months later, you can tell me it's crap. You need to buy the new one.
So before we move on, what are your projected prices for this piece of kit? The Pro one.
Oh, $500. Possibly $500? A little bit more.
500 quid.
Yeah. Sarah?
I bet it's not going to have a Retina display either.
I think it's because the iPad is getting some traction on the enterprise market now. I think it's got to be comparable with the iPad, both for the professional market and the consumer market. So I think the 500 mark is probably about right.
Kerry?
What's a basic iPad sell for?
I think it's just short of £500 here, I think.
So I think Microsoft would be about $100 less.
Okay. $399 for an iPad.
Ewan said $700 in the chat room. Alex has said $1 million.
I'm saying $100 for a comparable iPad, because they know they have different levels of...
The problem is if they make it much more expensive, they're never going to get the market. Apple have virtually cornered this market. They've got to give some incentive for people to actually go out and get this device over an iPad.
People have always picked Microsoft for the price. Nobody denied Apple didn't have a better product.
But you say that, but I still haven't seen a Kindle Fire yet.
Correct. That's what I was going to say as well.
That's in a really good price bracket.
But aren't they not available in this country yet? Kindle that Fires. Just America.
They're out in the summer, aren't
Carrie,
they?
Have you seen one? Have you seen someone
carrying one? You know, the ebook readers and such I don't pay much attention to, so...
Well, the Fire is the actual tablet version, so it's like the...
I've heard of it, but I... No, but they're supposed to be selling like crazy. What I know about it is that they're supposed to be selling like a wildfire, but no one's actually ever seen anybody with one.
They keep them at home, locked in the little cabinet.
Well, what you might see people with is a Samsung Galaxy S3. See how smooth that was?
Yes, I have.
Oh, nice.
Ching!
They're hot, aren't they?
Which this week or this month has... Replace the iPhone 4S as the UK's most popular mobile phone. Now, has anyone had a play with a Galaxy S3? I've got to say, on the posters I've seen, it looks very, very nice indeed. But has anyone actually had a physical play of them?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Do one catch fire. I'll
get one in the next couple of days. So I'm hoping to have a bit of a play with this.
I work in an open plan office, and as I walk past people's desks, you know, you can't help but see what phone's on the desk. And I see the Samsung. I see this massive screen. I mean, it's a good inch bigger than the screen on my Galaxy S original. And it says Samsung on the top. And I think that is just beautiful looking. They've got it spot on. It really is lovely looking. But that's all. I haven't nicked it yet. So swipe it, have a go at it. Stick mine to replace it. They're not going to notice.
But is it a case the hardware looks amazing, but the software's letting it down? Because I know Samsung have obviously put their own coating on Android, but once you dig a bit deeper, does the Android, how is the Android operating system? Because I don't use it myself. I'm stuck in iOS territory. Is it smooth as iPhone iOS?
I'm struggling to hear anybody, unfortunately.
He's gone there, so.
Should we just talk without? Should we just talk? What should we talk about?
Yes. They're saying it's gone glitch in the matrix in the chat room there, they're saying.
Yes.
Don't know. We're back. Oh, right. Oh, dear. Well, should we continue talking about it? Because I believe it's been recorded for training purposes.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Great enough now. So as I was saying, is it a case of the hardware looks fantastic, but the software is lacking?
It's still ice cream sandwich, isn't it? It's still running ice cream sandwich. I'm running ice cream sandwich on my Galaxy S, and it is not as good as iOS. It just simply isn't. It hasn't got a decent music player. It's got a web browser, which is just okay. You can get many of the same applications. The front end experience is great. But I don't think the application platform is quite as good, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep crashing.
So you're the Android heralder. What, any chance of defending it? Or do you think it needs defending?
I mean, you know, I like ice cream sandwich, as you guys know. I've got it on my Nexus S, and it's fine. Obviously, I've not seen the Nexus. Samsung Galaxy S 3 yet.
Sorry, Eric. Isn't that because you've got the vanilla version? It's the TouchWiz that messes it up on the Samsung phone.
Isn't it always?
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons I like having vanilla phones.
No, I agree. And I had an S2 for a while and I gave up on it because unless I started messing around with ROMs, I couldn't get a vanilla ice cream sandwich version onto it. It was just TouchWiz was just horrendous.
Mm-hmm. See, a lot of people, I noticed a lot of people who I follow on Twitter, who are my friends on Facebook, a lot of them have decided to go and get a Samsung Galaxy S3, and they're all saying the same thing. Oh, it looks beautiful. It's really beautiful. But none of them are saying, I really like using this phone as yet.
The HTC One X, I think, is a better phone in terms of overall look and feel and use.
Mm-hmm.
For me,
HTC Sense is better than TouchWiz, basically, as that.
Because the other thing is, sorry, Sarah.
I was going to say, for me, given the apart from the fact that I've got a phone that I'm still very happy with, if I was going to get a phone now, I'd be getting the phablet Galaxy Note.
That's the huge one, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Is Kerry still with us, or is he?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay.
But when it comes to these smartphones, I know some of you guys haven't worked with me before, but I'm a bit old school. As a very technical person, let me preface this. I don't like smartphones. I like my phone to make and receive phone calls. That's what I want. I don't want it to take pictures. I don't want it as a GPS. I don't want to watch HD movies on a 3-inch screen. I don't want to have half my battery life because of that screen. I don't like the brick shape. It's not comfortable against the side of my face. I don't like paying the extra money for the data plan. I don't like trying to type on a screen that small.
I don't like trying to browse
the web on a screen that small. I don't understand kids today and your smartphones and your Motorola razors.
Isn't it getting much harder to actually buy a dumb smartphone these days, Kerry?
No, as long as eBay is around, you can buy brand new Motorola Crazers still in the box. And when you take them to the Verizon store, the guys will look at you like, I don't know how to program this. So you do some Google searching and you download the Motorola phone tools illegally and you flash the phone yourself and you copy the data off your old phone onto it. You have to do it all yourself and then you activate it on the network and everything's happy.
Wow.
So a piece of cake.
I felt what it was like.
You have any idea how much work I have to go through? to have my
I felt what it was
phone.
Like to be Kerry Holtzman earlier because Twitter stopped working.
Oh, I didn't notice, did it? I had no idea.
Well, you're not on Twitter. And I thought, is this what it's like to be Kerry? Because I don't like it.
You just walk around with a bullhorn randomly shouting at people at what you're doing.
I do that anyway.
I'm in the library.
Look, well, anyway, like I said, yes, 3 is up on the top of the charts at the moment, but is it only there until the iPhone 5 comes out? That's the question.
Oh, yes.
Staying with Android, Amazon App Store has been announced for Europe. Apparently, UK, Germany, France, Italy, and Spain are the first countries to see the launch, and they are saying to the various developers that get your apps ready for this summer. So does anyone think the Amazon Store is going to offer a better experience than the native Google one? Because I hear it's a bit hard to find things in the Google Store. Android store.
No, Amazon is simply just going to make lots of money from it.
Yeah.
So what's, do anyone know the cut they take, Amazon, from the app? Because everyone knows Apple take 30%.
No, but wasn't there a big hoo-ha about them giving away apps for free and not telling the developers they were doing that?
That's right. There was a news story, I remember, a while back where they were alleged to have said to developers that we're giving your app away for free. It'll be good marketing for you, but we won't necessarily pay you anything for it.
Yeah, so everyone gets it for free, then doesn't buy it when it goes back up in price again. Mm. And they've still got to offer support on it.
But is it, what I'm saying, is it a cohesive app store? Is it all laid out properly? Has anyone, I mean, Carrie, you probably can't get it. You've only got a feature phone. And we haven't even got the technology here to get it either. Oh, good. That was a good story then, wasn't it?
Are you looking for Eric was here? I have on that. It makes no difference to me one way or the other. I'm very happy with both of them.
I must say, though, I do like the Google Play website because the way you can just send apps to your phone without you having to go through your phone, which is, I think, brilliant. And you can choose whatever phone you've got. If you've got more than one Android phone, you can choose which one you want
to
go to.
That's right. It says you can use it on this phone and that phone. It's quite brilliant.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah. I set up a phone for my dad who wasn't even here, and I just gave him loads of apps.
But, of course, the other question is, I don't know what the take-up of Amazon App Store is. I think, as I remember, when it was first out, because I think we discussed it on the big show, one of the big selling points was that Amazon gave away free applications, and it was the kind of the draw, because by default, people don't want to have to install another store on their phones, you know, and have to look in two different places for applications. The reason they had the free ones is they go on every day, I wonder what's free today. And it started off quite good and sort of dwindled to fairly crappy applications after a while. And I don't know if people are still using the Amazon App Store. Clearly, Amazon believe it's a seller. It's something that will sell products. But unless, I guess, you can do exactly what you can do with the Google Play Store and click something and it appears on your phone the next time you log into it. But then Amazon needs to sort of log into your phone and then it all gets a bit scary. But from what I can see, it's all about the Kindle Fire. As soon as the App Store arrives, I reckon the Kindle Fire won't be far behind.
Well, I think it'll be simultaneously, to be honest.
Yep. But do you think people will be more willing to buy from the Amazon App Store, though? Because they'll think all the apps have been vetted, so to speak. Whereas
quality control. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That creates an interesting issue about legal liability, actually, because if there is an issue where somebody's actually bought an app through the Amazon store, then where does the liability go if there's any issues with the app?
Well, I have to say, of any store, electronic online store I bought something from, I think I probably have the best customer service from Amazon, so at least they know what they're doing in that respect. Mm. The first thing they do is give you money back, I think.
Mm-hmm. You still get a refund after 50 or before 50 minutes is up on an app at Amazon.
Sorry, what's that, Dave?
On Google Play, if you don't like an app, when you've downloaded it, you can get your money back within 15 minutes, can't you? Which is fantastic, especially, you know, it's something that Apple should do. I wonder whether they do it with the Amazon store.
Not sure, actually. Well, it says summer, so mind you, it meant to be in summer now. You can't tell most days, but we shall see when it's released. Now, next story. Again, this is probably another one at least, Kerry, out. I just realised. Whoops. Apparently, nearly 70% of American Android users can't figure out how to connect to a Wi-Fi network. So they're just walking around using up their data from their carriers. Does this surprise anyone, this stat? Because it surprised the hell out of me.
Is that specific to Android or is it just generally? Because I can't see why it would be any different for an iPhone user.
Well, it says 29% of iPhone users in the US connect to the internet through nothing but cellular data. And that number shrinks down to 13% in the UK. Yeah, 68% of American Android users depend on their operator's data network and nothing else. That's quite high.
Well, yeah, I mean, a tech, I can say I have customers contact me on a regular basis wanting to, well, either they want to get on the Wi-Fi or they don't understand why, they don't understand the difference. And it's very difficult for me to explain it to them. Someone who's got no knowledge of networks and things like that, and trying to explain to them why they can do this when they're at home and they can't do it when they're on the road, or how to attach to their Wi-Fi. So it is a question I get quite frequently. And it's not always just a question of how do I get on the Wi-Fi, but what is it? So I think people need to understand what it is first. I mean, I run into people who buy a laptop and they call me and say, how come the internet doesn't work on it? And I say, well, who's your internet service provider? And they go, well, what do you mean? They think it's a radio. You just turn it on and you tune it to the station you want, and isn't internet everywhere? And you have to explain to them. And it can be difficult to explain that, you know, it's about, you know, 100 feet out of wherever the broadcast station is. And if you don't have your own broadcast station, then you can see, even in the way I'm trying to explain it now, it's I'm trying to use an analogy to something they understand. It's like a radio station that you have yourself, and they don't understand further that when they do open up their laptop and they get a Wi-Fi connection, that's not a safe place to go check your bank account information or do financial transactions on a network. Even when they pay for it at the hotel or at Starbucks, and they think, well, I paid for it, they still under this false assumption that it's somehow secure and safe to do these financial transactions. And it's been sort of a mission of mine to sort of raise awareness about this, that if it's not your network, you don't know if you're connected to the real network or somebody's fake man in the middle network. And in a way, it might be doing them a favor that they don't connect their phones to Wi-Fi units, because if they start doing that, then I think you'll see an increase in identity thefts and things of that nature.
I'd like to offer something, though, if I may, which I think is a little bit more brass tacks than that. On your iPhone or on your PC or Mac, as soon as you switch the Wi-Fi on, it comes on, it comes up and says, which network would you like to connect to?
Mm-hmm.
When you switch the Wi-Fi on an Android thing, by default, the network notification is switched off. And so you just switch it on, and it just doesn't do anything. And you have to go through, how many? Two levels of menu to be able to get to the Wi-Fi hotspots. And even then, you've got an on-off switch just there. And of course, you assume that that thing is just a label for the on-off switch, but you have to click the Wi-Fi button to get into the Wi-Fi menus.
I see a business opportunity here. I'll come and sort out your Android handset or iPhone handset to connect to your Wi-Fi. 20 quid a pop. That'd be okay, wouldn't it?
That looks very... that's ice cream sandwich on there, isn't it, James?
Yes. Well, it's kind of the vanilla kind of custom ROMy thing. I've been hacking it about a bit.
I think that does kind of explain the difference between the two, though. I know I originally asked why is it specifically about Android, but I think that answers it quite well, James.
I still find it a very shockingly high amount of people to have no idea about they can put their phone on their Wi-Fi system. Mm. Or Wi-Fi system, as they may call it. Well, there you go.
Just conversely, incidentally, on the iPhone, everybody knows, if you click Wi-Fi to on, your network list comes straight up. It's there. You can't help but see your Wi-Fi networks. On the Android, when you go look for it.
Oh, yes.
usability.
I can see my neighbour's one, and I can see it's unguarded as well. Not protected at all. I can't work out who it is to go and tell them.
Yes, Ewan. My Wi-Fi hotspot is called Jerry Halliwell Towers. It's where I live.
So, staying with networks, G4, apparently Minister for Culture, Ed Vasey, told an audience
Vasey.
Of the future of... Farsi, okay, sorry.
Vasey. That's Baroness Farsi and Ed Vasey.
Ed Fasey, that's who it is, told an audience at the Future of Entertainment Summit in London that G4 delay was the fault purely of the networks. He claims that legal threats from the mobile service providers is the main reason for Ofcom's hold-up on the license process for the next generation infrastructure so far. Let's see. He went on to say, just about every mobile service provider has threatened to sue Ofcom if they get it wrong. And if you want to look at the delay, don't look at Ofcom, don't look at the government, ask your mobile service provider. Do you reckon that's true, or do you reckon he's just trying to divert blame? James?
I haven't got 4G, so I don't care.
I know, but you won't have until they start to roll it out. No one's got 4G.
Well, no, I don't think my phone can do it. My phone can't. Can the iPhone 4 do 4G? Can the Galaxy S do 4G?
The iPhone 4 can, if you, can 4S can, if you're in America, but, you know.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, you see, it's not there yet. No. I'm not ready for it yet, Carl. Ready.
But don't you want it?
It'll just get full up.
It'll go charge more.
I was going to say, I mean, I think this, it's not still that widespread in the US, is it, Gary?
Yeah, I've ran some 4G air cards and laptops, and it's fast. I mean, well, at least what I think is fast. I mean, I don't have a 50 meg down up connection like Ewan, but I have a cable connection that's about 25 to 30, and the air card in 4G mode challenges that. And the upload speed on my cable connection, I think, is around 3, and on the air card was like 9 or 10. So, you know, the air card was faster in some ways than my cable connection, but there were bandwidth caps on it, so it wasn't a viable option to replace my cable with it because of that. But the 4G is actually, at least here in Arizona, it's pretty much everywhere. It's pretty rare that you don't get a 4G connection. Now, I don't know, I can't speak for other areas of the country, but it certainly is, I've had no problem with my air card getting 4G connections around Phoenix, no problem at all.
But is the coverage fairly widespread across the U.S., do you know?
I like I said, I don't know, but I'm sure in all the metropolitan areas it's going to be there already. When you get into some rural areas, probably not so much. But heck, I was out in a it's kind of funny, they have these retirement communities out here, and I was out at one of these, and they have this Wi-Fi that nobody can access. They all live in metal trailers, you know, and it's just really hard for the Wi-Fi to get in there. And anytime I present for them, they always have questions, how come my Wi-Fi doesn't work? And it's free with their rental or whatever, you know, living in the community. So they want it because it's free. But I pulled out my air card right on stage in a building, which is sort of in the, I'd say, on the edge of town. It's quite out of ways. I get a 4G connection and put it up on the projector and go to speedtest.net and show the upload and download speed that is more than 10 times faster than their free Wi-Fi that they have locally right there in their community that they can't connect to anyway. And, you know, for these folks, you know, to pay the $50 a month, the bandwidth cap wouldn't be an issue for them, because what they do with it is pretty much just basic web surfing and email. And I was surprised that, being out on the outskirts, that I was able to get a 4G. Now, when I was done with the presentation, a gentleman came up to me and said that 4G was just enabled like a week earlier. So where it's not yet in the United States, they are really pushing to get it rolled out. And it makes sense, because the sooner they roll it out, the sooner they can start charging for it.
That's true.
Yeah.
David, are you looking forward to it?
Yeah, I use data around about quite a lot now. And I've got an iPad with a Vodafone 3G network, an iPhone with an Orange one, and another iPhone with O2. And they're all pants at times, to be honest. So I could do with a data network which is fast and reliable. And there just isn't one. There isn't one network which is consistently good everywhere you go.
Hmm. True. I wish, talk about 4G, I wish I'd get 3G in London sometimes. It's terrible most places.
Yeah. Well, we have, I live in Maidenhead, where the three headquarters is, and we can't get a 3G network 100 feet from their head office.
You've got to knock on their door.
Yeah.
I'm wondering actually if the future, rather than being individual devices with, obviously they can make telephone calls, but I don't think, unless you want to download a large file very quickly, because phones don't tend to do multitasking, you don't have multiple windows open. So, for example, your browser doesn't start downloading something while you watch a YouTube video, while you stream something. You know what I mean? There's not a huge amount of that going on your portable device. I'm wondering if the future of 4G are these Wi-Fi, you know, tiny little Wi-Fi producers things that you have a 4G chip in it and you've got a local area network which is connected to it. Mm-hmm. I think that's a... Of course, what you have to do then is you have to be mindful of how quickly you're using your data up, because that could be gone so quickly. You know, you can use 100 meg in minutes if you've got everything kind of piling into the network at once. And then again, then your pros make a lot of money.
Especially now that Apple is going to let you FaceTime over 3G, and people are just going to accept FaceTime calls without even knowing they're using their 3G network.
Oh God, yes. We're going to blow through our credit. So, Sarah, was you saying something then?
I just said that's a very scary thought, actually.
Or receiving a FaceTime call from me.
Well, no, just the thought of, you know, if they're allowing FaceTime over 3G, I mean, at least Skype actually is, I think there's some restriction in terms of actually being able to use it on 3G. And certainly I know I always make sure I'm using it when I'm using it on the handset. I use it on Wi-Fi only because... It's just going to, you know, even audio is just going to burn through that data usage like it's going out of fashion. Mm-hmm. So the idea of video as well, it's just makes me shudder at the thought.
And the big difference, isn't it, is Skype you have to turn on and FaceTime is always on.
Always on? What do you mean by always on?
You don't switch it on. If someone FaceTimes you...
Oh, you can turn it off though, can't you? You can turn it off in the settings.
You can. But mm-hmm. then you don't receive any FaceTime calls at all, do you? Wherever you are.
So is it video and audio or nothing?
Yes, you can't differentiate. You can't just accept audio, unfortunately.
No. And I think it's great FaceTime, but you know, not when you've got a 500 megabyte a month data limit.
Well, no, they're going to have to increase those, aren't they?
Yeah.
Right, now this next door, you guys are going to have to help me with, because I'm not sure I fully understand it. So the FBI is worried about IPv6 address, public traceability, says legislation may be needed. Apparently, law enforcement agencies, including the FBI and the DEA, are reportedly worried about the potential loss of tracking abilities that will come with the shift to the new system. The fear is that the internet service providers will have less incentive to keep the sections of their public IP databases up to date. So who can tell me what that means?
I think it's because of the fact there's going to be a lot more devices on it, and IPv6 is not as straightforward as just a couple of digits in actually determining who you are. It's a lot harder to actually track an individual device, and I think they're worried about the fact that there's not the skill set out there, or, you know, it's a lot harder to actually trace an individual device.
I think my understanding of it, maybe I'm misunderstanding it, but what I'm taking from this is if you have a block of IP addresses that are assigned to you, you're an ISP, and they said, we're giving you 67.28. Whatever through whatever, 1 through 100, where, you know, 1 to 255, you get that whole range. How do you do that on IPv6? How can you see a range, you know, sequentially from, you know, that's logical with these hex? It's not as clear. To me, it's not.
And, well, the issue is, it's not that the fact they can be traceable, it's the fact that they can't be traceable. It's the fact that a large company will buy a truckload of them and just sling them all over the place, so there's no geographic pattern. For example, looking at the... I have XChat open, and it's running IRC, and when people log on, you can actually see what the domain of the IP address is, and it resolved, and you can pretty much get where they are. I mean, I know that Ewan logged on using an NTL, a Virgin Media address, and the fact that IPv6, because of the granular nature of it, the fact that, well, it literally is a granular nature, they can be blown to the four winds and to be able to maintain a catalogue of where geographically a small block of IP addresses is, of IPv6 addresses, is almost going to be impossible to do because things are so portable.
But aren't, I mean, surely they've just not got to now and said, oh, hang on a minute, we can't trace this properly anymore. I mean, IPv6 has been threatened for years.
Yeah, but I think, as James was saying, the nature of it is there's such vast ranges that you're going to get an organization. And I'm not in any shape or form decrying Microsoft, but it's just because we were talking about them, I thought about they could buy an entire range for the entire world. And yep. In terms of, you know, with IPv4, it tends to be very geographical because of the fact that also the internet has evolved around the usage of these IP addresses. So when it was originally set up, it would be like a particular class A license would be for a, you know, would be in a particular country. Mm-hmm. With this, I think what's happening is because there's a big swap, Microsoft and every other big company is going to say, right, okay, well, we'll have this massive range and we'll use it for the entire company worldwide, which means that you can't actually look at an address and say, oh, yeah, that's in the US or the UK or France or wherever.
Just as you can't with a MAC address now.
No, you can't with a MAC address because obviously that's tied to the device and, you know, that depends on where it was manufactured and it could have been shipped anywhere in the world.
Well, that's how IPv6 is going to be given out. It's probably going to be given out at the point of manufacture.
It actually makes sense to do that, which makes it
pain
complete.
In the ass.
But we are not
traceable.
Okay.
The problem with the way the article is phrased that I can see where there's a little confusion is two sentences. It says it's not that IPv6 is inherently any less secure, but that new addresses will be handed out by the American Registry for Internet Numbers on a much less regular basis. And as such, the fear is that internet service providers will have less incentive to keep their sections of public IP addresses updated. Why? Why will they have less incentive to keep? That doesn't really explain that. I don't understand why, if they're handing them out on a much less regular basis, then why do the ISPs have less?
Is it because they've got so many of them, they don't have to worry about running out and then think, well, okay, we need some more?
That may be.
That's all I can think of.
The article's just kind of poorly written, I think. It doesn't seems like maybe the person who wrote it didn't fully understand it.
To be fair, it's not just about IPv6 because whatever system, when IPv4 was implemented and we used it for the internet, everyone thought, oh, that's going to be more than enough devices. And as I say, the internet's growing up around it. So it's evolved in a way where we can geographically allocate blocks of addresses and so on and so forth. With IPv6, you've got a complete structure that's already there that this is going in and replacing. So it's quite natural that an organization is going to say, right, well, we'll have that whole block, which is going to make it untraceable.
I can't remember how IPv6 is routed, whether it's routed in the same way, because obviously you have a subnet. If I were to have like 100 IPv6 devices in my house and connected them to my cable modem, would I go to Virgin Media and ask for 100 IPv6 addresses for all of them? And they would just get serial, rather than being NAT, which is everything now, so I have my own private subnet here, I'd have real world IP addresses for IPv6 addresses for all my devices in my house. But I would be expecting my ISP to give me those. Because I need their routers to know of my IPv6 address to be able to get
That's
out.
Right.
It's just the fact the sheer quantity of them means that the ISPs are going to be, I don't know, whether if they check, it's a bit of an odd one, isn't it? Because I can't see them ever being sold or maybe they're subcontracted. I don't really know.
I mean, we only given, say by Virgin or Sky, whoever now, IPv4s. Like they may have IPv6 behind their walls, but when they hand it out to us, it gets somehow converted down to IPv4. So I can't see how they're not going to be able to track us. Because the packets are knowing where to go. So if they're tracking, there's obviously an address in those packets somewhere.
Mm.
I mean, that's how it works, packets, isn't it?
I would think in a lot of cases, you would still need NAT and you can operate IPv4 or IPv6 depending on what you desire and what you need, the number of addresses behind that network. So, because for every single device to have an individual version 6 IP address on the internet, we're going to quickly be back to where we started from again.
The fact is, I don't want to be arrested because my fridge is downloading a movie.
This is exactly what we're saying, but this is the whole point. I mean, every house soon will have plenty of devices, not just your iPhone and your iPad and your laptop and, you know, your media PC. It won't just be that. It will be just, you know, everything that's got any kind of chip inside it.
Yeah, so think about your car.
I can't see how we cannot have NAT. If we're arrogant enough, and I say us as a worldwide nation in terms of usage of the internet, if we're arrogant enough to think that we can just, every single device that's ever out there can have its own IP address on the internet, I think that's just foolish. If we did that, it would be foolish. We'd be very quickly back to where we started from again, with a problem with IPv4 licenses.
True. Well, I think one of the things the FBI might want to do is they want to keep an eye on the Pirate Bay. Apparently, UK, we tried to block the Pirate Bay.
Every single one of these, Carl, has been an absolute solid gold segue. I'm very impressed.
Right, thank you very much. So the UK blocked the Pirate Bay last month, I think it was, in a landmark High Court ruling. Oh, April, it says here, sorry. So BT, TalkTalk, Sky, Virgin, O2 and Everything Everywhere have already prevented customers from accessing the site. However, the Pirate Bay has seen an increase in traffic from England using proxy servers. Apparently, 30% increase from BT customers, 15% from Virgin Media customers, and Sky 6%. So basically, it's not worked. And I don't think this sort of procedure is ever going to work. You can't block, because it's there, it exists. It's the wrong way, I feel, to fight this sort of thing. The best thing is to offer a better service than what the pirates are offering. So you make it cheaper for you to download your songs or your films or whatever, and you make it a hell of a lot easier.
Yeah, and it's legitimate, so it's going to carry more weight.
Mm-hmm. You know, I remember back in the day, there wasn't such a thing as Pirate Bay. We had this thing called Napster. When they shut down Napster, they sure did keep people from stealing music, didn't they?
Oh, yes.
Oh, wait. No, they didn't, because places like the Pirate Bay came. I would venture to guess that if they left Napster alone and accepted those losses, and I'm reaching here, but maybe places like Pirate Bay would have never surfaced because they would have never been needed.
True. And
at least you'd know your enemy and you'd understand what your losses were and leave it at that. But no, every time they think they're putting a stop to something, something else crops up. There's a website called Newsbin, NEWZBIN2. Why has it got a 2 on it? Because Newsbin was sued in the British courts. They lost. They shut them down. And somehow the code for Newsbin was stolen. Somebody on a private island somewhere has fired it back up. And so they went back to court in England and they said, we have to block people from being able to go to this site. And so the folks at Newsbin say, we have a Newsbin 2 client. If you don't have it, please download it. The client will bypass all the DNS and will connect you directly to Newsbin. And all Newsbin is doing shouldn't even be illegal to begin with, which is simply cataloging what's available on the news groups, okay? They don't host the news groups. They don't condone or disapprove of what's being posted. It's simply cataloging what's there. You can take that information and you can download music and movies and software and TV shows and books and everything that's media can be downloaded through news groups. It's been that way. Way, way, way back before there was a World Wide Web, there were news groups. And that's really the original internet. And there's no tracking of news groups like there is with BitTorrent. So you're completely anonymous. And they have done, as far as I know, they've done nothing to shut that down. As far as I know, they can't shut it down. It's sort of this in limbo area. And yet, when they bring all this media attention to it, people go, oh, I never heard of that before, and you just educated a bunch of people on this new way that you can go and get software. By me just saying it now, somebody listening has gone, I've never heard of that before. I want to check that out. You see what the caveat there is? By trying to stop it, you have just educated everybody as to what it is who may have been completely unaware of it before. And now you're going to have an increase, right? When Madonna back in the day did something that the press was like, back in the 80s, oh, I can't believe that she did this. Album sales went up. I mean, this is the same story over and over and over again. And why should we feel like this is, I don't even understand why this is media worthy. Why is this even worth writing about? It's like, look, we knocked over a wall and then it fell and hit the ground. Well, what did you think was going to happen when you knocked over the wall? That it was going to float in midair or fly away? Of course it's going to fall and hit the ground. Of course when you try and shut down Pirate Bay, usage is going to go up. It just seems obvious.
I have to say, Kerry, the newsworthy of it actually is I would suggest it's part of the chronicle of history. It is a point in time when another attempt was made. And people are going to look back on the 1990s and the years and the 2000s to see this kind of morass, from people recording stuff off the telly to tape machines, to people lending CDs and then burning them onto CD-ROMs, to Napster, to BitTorrents, to whatever is going to be next. And they're going to see this constant picture of the music industry not getting it. And what this is just one more anecdotal element to that story. And so in the respect from a historical perspective, that is where it is. As far as the news goes, you said it yourself, it is outraging. People are going to go, the people who haven't heard of the Pirate Bay, and there are people who haven't, will go, oh, what is this thing? I might as well look at it. Oh, look, yep. Free music.
Exactly, right? I mean, that's how everybody's talking about the iPhone. I got to go get an iPhone. Everybody's talking about the Microsoft Surface. Everybody's talking about the Pirate Bay. What is this? What's everybody talking about?
It's not free music, by the way, listener.
No, absolutely. Actually, you're right, though.
Kerry, I'm not saying it's right or it's wrong. I'm just saying this is how it is. This is the reality of it.
It's wrong.
And I think you're absolutely right. They need to figure out, the music industry or the media companies need to figure out another way that's less heavy-handed. And look, if you put every single one of your customers in jail, I mean, do people in jail, are they customers anymore? Do they have the freedom to go and buy stuff? I don't think they do. You will effectively put yourself right out of business. If you took everybody who's ever illegally downloaded a song and you put every one of them in jail, which is effectively what the music industry seems to want, who's going to be left to buy your music?
Well, there was that poor woman, wasn't there, who became the cause célèbre of the music industry, bringing their hands down heavy and saying, you will pay us $10,000 for every song your son or daughter downloaded. Right. And everybody just... And I felt ever so bad for her, because she was being victimized for something which was completely impractical, pointless, and just it didn't demonstrate anything but the ignorance of the music industry, rather than setting an example for everybody.
But what's worse is the jury awarded it. How did they convince the jury that $10,000 per song was a reasonable amount of money? So, you know, I don't know that the punishment's fitting the crime here. Again, I'm not condoning it. I'm simply saying this is the reality, and they need to figure out a better system, and it's their own fault. You know, they were fighting all this. I mean, look at the rootkit stuff Sony put on their CDs. Right? And you make a good point about the cassette tapes and recording off the radio. You just didn't want the DJ to talk over the song, you know? We didn't care what the quality was. It was good enough, right? I mean, then again, the stereo systems we had weren't as nice. If you had a boombox and you recorded what was on the FM radio, it sounded as good on the recording as it did on when it was broadcast. So,
I mean, the fact is, we're going to be coming back into this conversation in a year's time. We'll have exactly the same thing about another technology that the music industry has decided to come down heavy on.
Absolutely. David, you got any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think the ISPs are playing a bit of a PR game at the moment as well, because they're being told by whoever to block Pirate Bay or whatever, and they're just doing it because they just don't want to get into trouble. But they know that there's other ways around it, but they're just toeing the line. And I do think that 95% of the people will be stopped from going to Pirate Bay, because if I type it into my browser now, there's a thing comes up saying due to court action, we're not allowed to take that website. And, you know, 95% of people see that and say, oh, all right, then I'll go somewhere else.
But can you imagine if they did this with the telephone and said, block them from calling this number? Putting that on the phone company to say, you don't let people call this phone number.
I can see why they're doing it.
Make that the phone company's responsibility to keep you from dialing that number. That doesn't seem fair to the phone company. That's how you use their service. It is not under their control. If I buy a screwdriver and I use it to jab somebody in the eyeball, that shouldn't be the screwdriver manufacturer's fault that I didn't use it the way it was intended to be used, and now they have to put a label on it, not to do not jam an eyeball.
I agree, but I think the other way they would have to do it is if start supplying names and addresses of people that are going to certain sites. And I don't think ISPs want to get into that game. I think
But put it to the phone company. Would the phone company have to provide the names and addresses of people who dialed certain numbers? It doesn't seem like it's fair to put that on the company who's providing the service, that they have to track how people are using their service. It just doesn't feel right.
So I'll let you have the last word. Is there anything they could do to technically stop people visiting these sort of sites that you can think of? Sarah?
No, because the thing is, you can always set up a VPN or a proxy in another country.
Mm. What people seem to be forgetting is that the internet exists as well as the web. The web is a layer on top of the internet. The internet is an absolute total mess. It's very difficult to find anything on it.
Well, the answer's right there for the music companies and TV companies and film companies. Make it cheap, make it available, and just get it out there, because you're competing with free and it's just not worth it. You might as well stop wasting your money on courts and lawyers and these weird software things and just use that money to make your product available and easy to get hold of. And
hallelujah.
Then see what happens.
Amen, brother.
This podcast and all the other podcasts on the network have been brought to you by UK2.net. They really do keep us on the air, and they've been wonderful to us for the last 3 years. We hope they're going to stick with us a lot longer as well. If you'd like to show your appreciation to us, just show it to them as well. If you just visit our main website, BritishTechNetwork.com, scroll down and use Find a UK2.net link. Go through and buy anything you need to get onto the internet, onto the website, and get your business out there. And if you use any of these voucher codes, you'll get some discounts. Just run through them quickly. If you use British Tech for all of these and then just simply add DNS, you'll get free DNS for up to 2 years. If you add domains, you'll get 20% off your domain registration. If you use VPN, you'll get 50% off your first month of VPN. If you use Surfer, you'll get £50 off any gigabit server on any contract length. And if you use VPS, you'll get your first month for it free when purchasing entry-level VPS. Like I say, they really do keep us on the air, and we'd be most grateful if you show us some gratitude by buying something from them. So, cool things. I haven't got a cool thing, I've got to say up front. I'm ashamed to say. Unless I can think of one before you guys finish. So, James, cool thing.
I've got a miss of the week and a cool thing of the week.
Okay.
It was brought to my attention. We've been having this thing in the UK called the Leveson Inquiry, which is basically an inquiry into the behaviour of the press and the way journalists investigate things. And there's this character, an MP called Louise Mensch, who's been popping up. She's a Conservative MP, and she's also, as people who represent members of the government go, not bad looking. I think we'll go as far as that. As a consequence of this, she's picked up quite a lot of social media attention. What she's done, get this, is in typical MP completely out of touch way, she's started her own social media website called, get this, it's funny, alternative to Twitter, called Mention, MENSHN. You can only discuss the topics that they want you to discuss. And at the moment, it's only available in America.
Well, and what's the subject? Do you know what the subject is at the moment?
Election 2012, Barack Obama, and it's just boring. It's a political Twitter. Can you think of anything more anodyne, less freeform, less serendipitous than... I found a way to get to the original America site. I asked an adult to do it for me, and it really is the dullest website in the world. It basically sucks all the joy out of anything that Twitter could be. So if you get a chance, mention M E N shn.com and see if you can cause some trouble like Daily Mail readers. on the flip side, my pick of the week is it's available for Android phone and for iPhone. It's called, and I've forgotten what it's called. I got overexcited then. It's called Songpop. The reason that I've forgotten what it's called is because it's got such a crap name. Songpop. It's basically a pop quiz on a phone. Do you remember in the 1980s when the Radio 1 Roadshow used to come into town and they used to do something called Bits and Pieces, play 10 snippets of songs and people had to recognise what the songs were, write them down, and if they won, they got a kiss from Mike Reed or something worse. The thing called Song Pop is basically it's a social game. Log in with your Facebook account, find someone to play against, and you have to identify out of a list of tracks what track is playing. And you have to click as quickly as possible, and if you get it faster than the other person, you get points. And I think you draw something to the extent that it started small, everybody's going to play with it, and then I'm going to get bored of it. But at the moment, great fun. Song Pop, available for Android and Apple iOS devices.
Is it free, did you say?
It is completely free, although they'll probably try and sell you something.
Okay. Kerry, you got a cool thing?
I do, yes. Well, it's not a smartphone, but it is brand new, super high tech. Let's see if we can get this on the screen. There's a little delay to the video here, so I'll try and hold this up as best I can. This is the fastest router, the strongest, fastest, most coverage router you can buy today, according to everybody. This is an ASUS RTN66U. That just rolls right off the tongue, doesn't it? The RTN66U. This thing has 8 SSIDs, broadcasts on the 2.4 gigahertz network and the 5 gigahertz network, so it's dual band. You can plug an air card into one of its USB ports, so if your internet connection dies, it can automatically fall over to the air card to keep you up and running. You can plug a hard drive into the other USB port or a printer to access over the internet and create your own Napster. You can have, not that you would.
No.
This will go up to 450 megabits per second times 2 with channel bonding, which gives you the 900 that you see, the wireless 900, if you have a card that can do that. It has removable antennae, so that if you're not getting the coverage you want, ideally you'll be able to buy different antennas. I don't know if I can hold this where you can see it. You can buy different antennas and replace them to increase your coverage. If you have a house where you're having trouble getting a signal to the basement or to one side of the house or the other, if you just replace your router, rather than buy an extender or a repeater, just buy this bad boy right here, you'll probably be able to go to your neighbor's house and maybe even their neighbor's house and be able to get on your network. That's how strong this router is. It's a very impressive. It's about $180, so it's not cheap, but it's got a lot of features. It includes the parental controls and QoS services. It's gigabit. It's all gigabit Ethernet on the ports. It's got 3 guest networks on the 2.4 and 3 guest networks on the 5. So plus you've got your 2 main networks on the 2.4 and the 5 for a total of 8 SSIDs. If you wanted to set up different rules, it's got a built-in VPN server. It's got WPS, which you should disable because of course it's flawed and can easily be cracked. DLNA support. I can go on and on and on talking about all the features.
It's impressive. It's amazing. Basically. Yes.
It's very impressive. So if you're a nerd like me, you gotta have at least one.
Yes, so
are you using it right now, Kerry?
I am, yes. I hooked it up last night.
So it sounds more successful than the one you got, James. A little while.
The interface.
My one works reasonably well now. It's just I've had to turn... The problem with complicated routers like this is if you turn everything on, you end up with firewalls and all this stuff, and it doesn't work properly because you've stymied it because Skype wants to do something slightly odd. So I just turn off security, just let everybody use it, and it'll be fine.
Never had that problem. Never had that problem.
I was impressed, by the way, Kerry. It's got 3 antennas. That's good. The more antennas, the better.
Sarah,
like your Dre-Tech, James.
Yeah, that's right. Three.
I was talking to somebody about that today, but that's another story. But my cool thingy is the webcam that I'm actually using to do this broadcast. I've done it for a few weeks now, and I must admit, when the broadcast has actually been showing my shot full frame, it's scary actually how much detail it's actually showing. It's the Logitech C920 HD webcam. It's pretty good. £60 on Amazon. Does the job, must admit, it's the sharpest camera I've had. And the thing personally I love about it, which is quite recognition from the fact that that you want to do these kind of thing these days, is it's got a little the tripod thing that you can screw a tripod on the bottom to it, which is great because it means you can put it exactly what height you want, which for me is quite good. I need to suss it out and get a little mini tripod for this. But yeah, it's great.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Just started off a video. sorry, how much did you say that was? £60?
About 60. It's on Amazon at the moment, it is £61.
Okay. Good. Dave?
Yeah, mine is a free pick. It's available on iOS and Android. It's a clever, clever app. It actually saves you money because what it does, it does some clever compression stuff and enables you to use less data on 3G. It's called Anavo, O-N-A-V-O. And according to the app that I've got on my iPhone, it's saved me 240 meg over the last 3 months, which isn't a massive amount, but when you've only got 500 meg a month or a gig a month, it can all add up and stops you just going into that horrible place where you get charged an enormous amount of money for exceeding your data limit. But it's totally free and it saves money.
Does that work on streaming stuff as well, just websites?
Websites, I think, mostly. I think it can work on streaming stuff, but I haven't really... It just works. You just turn it on and it just works. So nice. I think it does something.
And what's the name of that again?
Anavo.
Okay, I have got... Thank you very much for that. I have got a pick. Apparently at the Science Museum at the moment, we have Codebreaker, an Alan Turing Life and Legacy exhibition, sorry. It runs until 31st of July 2013, so you've got some time to go and see it. All about Alan Turing and his Codebreaker days. And it's free to get in as well at the Science Museum, so that's brilliant. My pick. Okay, one more thing before we go. We have got the British Tech Bash coming up soon on the 6th of July. Now, a lot of people are coming. I'm sure you can't come, Kerry, because it's a bit of a trek.
I'd love to go. I would love to. So, I will. So, it will happen someday.
Someday.
Not too late to book that plane ticket.
James, you're coming, aren't you?
Certainly am. In fact, it may well be the inaugural performance by rock, pop, electro combo Jamfolder. So worth coming just for that. Absolutely. Just for some terrible, terrible embarrassment.
Sarah, you're going as well, aren't you?
I'm flying over from Ireland, even though I'm away at the time.
Hey, that's commitment. And I'm Dave, are you coming?
I'm going to be the party pooper because I have to work.
Work? Well, it goes on to about midnight, so you've got plenty of time to get in.
Yeah, I'll see how it goes, but no promises at this stage.
Okay. Well, if you want to come, just go to our main website, BritishTechNetwork.com, and there's a banner at the very top of the screen. If you just click through to that, you can see you can go there and order your tickets. It is a £20 ticket at the moment, but you'll probably get that back, I think, as far as I know from Ewan. It's just so we can know what the numbers are coming and they actually show up. So please come and join us. There's a fair few of us already going there, I can see if I scroll down, including me, I'm afraid, so I will be there. But there you go. Can't have everything, can you? James, where can we get hold of you?
You can't. Twitter's broken.
Okay, but where it's working, could we get hold of you?
When it is working, SYZYDY. Scissors you on Twitter.
Oh, sorry, and Ewan's just told me no refund now, and Natco has confirmed that he's coming. So £20. But it's still going to be a fantastic day. Lots of beer, lots of food, pig roast, and we're going to do all the podcasts, as many of the podcasts as we can do.
There'll be a vegetarian roast for the vegetarians as well.
It will actually be a vegetarian, so... Kerry, where can we get hold of you?
You can check out my podcast. It's tech-vets.com, Veterans of Technology. It's all about
the trials and tribulations of running a computer repair business. Of course, it's free and available whenever you want to hear it. www.tech-vets.com.
Good stuff. Sarah?
You can get a hold of me on the Twitters at, again, when it's working, at SarahJaneUK.
Good stuff. And Dave?
Yeah, website, iconfessimageek.com, podcast in the same place, and on Twitter when it's working at iconfessimageek.
And how are you getting on with your iPhone connected mini?
Do you not see my tweet? I tweeted from the mini today.
I didn't see it. I missed that, my friend.
Yeah, it's cool. It's very good, actually.
Okay, my name's Carl Madden. You can get me on Twitter at Clause0101, or you can catch me on Worlds Apart, a show I do with Missy, where we discuss the differences between the Brits and the Americans. You can also catch me on AppChat, where we talk about apps. I have a new one coming out on Monday. The last one was DriveGain, which is a fantastic app that helps save you money on your fuel. That's it, everyone. Hope you enjoyed the show. Hopefully Ewan will be back next week. Until then, stay safe and see ya.